the odd pube might just fall down your trouser leg. Hello, Michelle.
Hello, Geordie. How you going, mate?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm great. I'm great. I'm always great.
As always.
Snowing. It's a weather report again. Snow.
Bloody hell. So boring.
I know. Nothing's going on. You know, I always say when nothing's going on, it's
a good thing.
It's good.
Relax.
Yeah.
No news is good news, et cetera, yada, yada.
Yes. Really, it's an even keel.
Well, that's a very boring podcast, if you ask me, Michelle.
Oh, what can I say?
We need some excitement.
Oh, okay. Excitement. No new deaths on the mountain. Sorry to say. No, right. No.
Well, I'm glad. Michelle, are you okay? Oh, sorry. Are you okay? You seem a little crazy.
I'm not wishing for death. I'm sorry. That sounded horrible.
Yes,
that sounded like I'm wishing for bad things just...
Just so you've got something interesting to talk about.
Clickbait.
Honestly.
Yes.
Oh, Michelle, I think it's time we just told everybody what they're doing. What are you doing? You've turned on a podcast. Unfortunately for you, it's turned out to be this one. It's called Eavesdropping. It's a chitty-chatty type of affair where we tell stories to each other and you just get to listen because you're an eavesdropper, and I'm Geordie.
And I'm Michelle. You are eavesdropping on us. Apologies for that, for this bloody weird start. I know, it's not good. It's because I've been so obsessed with maths. I've been in maths world, maths Australia, married at first sight.
Yes.
I haven't been living my own life.
I feel exactly the same way, Michelle. It's kind of stupid. I kind of sneak off. I've stopped watching it with the husband because he can't keep up with the demand that I have, because I've now been able to find somewhere that I can watch it in advance. I don't have to wait to watch 4 episodes a week on UK
TV. Drip.
No, I've actually found a direct source where it's all the episodes at once.
You found your dealer. You got your hit of maths. I'm telling you. I know this about myself when it comes to rubbish TV. Mm. I know that I shouldn't even watch one episode of Maths Australia because
I am
hooked right in. Mm. And it's hours, 20 plus hours of your life
gone. Yes, I know what you mean. And I thought about that today. That fleeting thought passed my mind. And I thought to myself, but if I didn't, then I would never know the joy that is Lucinda and Timothy. And we just said it, didn't we? They need their own show. I would just love, even if those guys didn't get together, and I don't know if they will, I haven't got that far yet, but I just think those two need to stay in the media. They need to stay together, a double act going forward. I want to see them on my screen all the time.
I love them. I love Lucinda.
What did she say the other day? I liked it when her dad said, "You're a brick, aren't you? Don't get your tits in a tangle.
Have a one-night stand with my daughter." The dude was a legend.
But I still will be offering people tea, coffee, coconut water.
I have been texting with friends about this because they're yes. UK friends, so they are behind.
What do they say?
Well, not a fan of Sarah. My friend said she thinks Timothy looks like a Disney owl. And I thought, well, I guess if you put some feathers on Timothy's face, I can kind of see he's a little bit owly.
You'd have to put the feathers on, yeah. So everybody looks like an owl on this TV show. Apologies for those of you not watching Maths, who for them, reality TV is not your jam. And that's fair too. You don't have to be a follower of silly old reality TV. In fact, even my parents have said, that's ridiculous. Why would you watch that? Whilst watching Bold and the Beautiful. Everyone has their own thing that they like.
So my life's been very boring because I've been in Maths world.
It's all about the TV. Yep. Get it. Have you watched anything else, or is there nothing else matters
nothing
right
else
now?
Matters.
It's all about marriage.
Nothing else matters
night.
And I don't have time. I actually have a life and things to do, which...
So she says.
We all went on the back burner while I was Maths obsessed.
Well, I'll tell you something. I stayed in a really oldie-worldy B&B recently, in an oldie-worldy little National Trust village, and it's possibly haunted, Michelle.
Oh, my God.
It's possibly haunted.
Tell me why you think this. What happened?
Nothing happened.
Okay, end of story. That's over. Moving on.
And that's the end of my story. No, I did a little video for you, and perhaps you saw it, perhaps you didn't, but we can maybe put it on our social media. I sent you the video because there was a room in my room which has beautiful views. And when I opened the room door, inside the room, there was another little room, aka a wardrobe, but there's a chair in there and there's another door that was locked. I tell you what, I was having bad Ronald vibes.
I'm getting creeped out.
It's like a room in a room.
I'm getting creeped out by that because, well, A, it does connect a little bit to my story today.
Does it?
Pin that shit.
Pinning.
But also too, any room or cupboard or wardrobe with a chair in there, come on.
Why is it there?
What? Like who's in that wardrobe? Voluntarily? Not voluntarily? Oh my God. Is that like the naughty step, but it's a locked wardrobe? No, this is creeping me out.
And then there's another door in there that's locked. Oh my God. It's just so weird.
Okay.
I didn't understand. So I didn't sleep there. I sent one of my children in there to sleep with my husband.
You put your children in the creepy haunted room. You're a bitch. What a bitch. Here you go, kids. Really go nice in there. Go and be haunted.
Yeah, you sleep in there. See what happens in the night. Oh, I'm sorry. No, it was quite distressing. I knew there was nothing to be worried about, but because I'd had the thought, I knew that I would not be able to sleep in there. So that's why I sacrificed my child, who sleeps through anything. He was fine.
Sacrificed your child on the altar of bad Ronald. Wow. I do find that very concerning. That there is a chair and a locked cupboard, because I'm also getting, again, apologies to anyone who has not seen Mr. In Between. There was a horrible episode where there was a locked cupboard that led to a door that led to a room. Oh yes, you will. It was the most disturbing episode of the entire season. This stuff, I don't know. I joined the dots, maybe incorrectly. So, Geordie, that's quite terrifying. I mean, when I've stayed in hotels and things, I found kind of gross stuff.
Like what?
I found a chicken bone between the sheets.
Huh?
Yeah.
It's like my dog slept there.
A fucking chicken bone. Someone's eating fried chicken in the bed.
That's awful.
Oh, that was in this horrible hotel in Sydney. It was terrible. Chicken bone.
Oh, God.
I found a sock at the end of the bed. It makes you think.
Oh, that's disgusting.
These sheets have not been changed.
Did they bother to change the sheets?
This was an expensive hotel, and it's like, what the actual fuck?
You don't know what you're getting. You don't know.
You don't know. Socks under the bed. Yeah, I get that. Okay, maybe the cleaner didn't look. That's fine. But anything in the bed? Not nice. Hair, no. I can understand. Maybe the cleaner's hair. A strand fell while she was cleaning, but a sock?
The odd pube might just fall down your trouser leg.
No.
But I found some nasty things in your house, Michelle.
Yeah, I know, when you Airbnb'd. I'm going to cut you dead here. Because
I didn't Airbnb. You Airbnb'd, I cleaned.
I Airbnb'd, but I know you found the gross stuff. And two words, pubes, syringe. That's all that needs to be said.
There was no pubes.
There was one time you messaged me about a lot of hair.
There's like a whole head of hairs worth in your bathroom, yes. But no, the syringe thing was separate. It was condoms and a syringe.
Oh, fucking hell.
And then I found the packet for the syringe, which was like lidocaine, which is a numbing agent. I don't know what was going on. I also found cocaine.
Of course you did. Of course. Baggies everywhere. I mean, that's why they were having a good time.
No, it wasn't baggies. It was leftovers on your kitchen bench.
Oh, man. Connie's Coke.
Connie's?
Connie's.
Is that what you call it?
Connie's Coke.
Have you slipped on your Connie, love? Slip on a Connie and come to bed. So romantic. That's the sort of thing I expect to hear on MAFS, Married at First Sight Australia.
I would love if I heard slip on a Connie and come to bed, mate.
And that's how they do it in Australia.
That is how they do it.
Speaking of Australia, Michelle, you know our favourite Australian modern mystic?
Tamira.
Tamira. She's recently sent a message and a story to look into. And it is from Australia, actually.
That's interesting because I also am in Australia for my story.
How wonderful.
It's an Aussie extravaganza today and we didn't even plan it.
Exactly. But somehow we combined and here we are. Let me tell you a little bit about this story. Aussies will know about it probably. It was in the news. It's a man called Gabriel Nagy who went missing. I don't know if that's how you pronounce his name. N-A-G-Y. Nagi or Nagi. Nagi.
Nagi.
Nagi. So Gabriel Nagi went missing from his home in Newcastle, which is in New South Wales. It's above Sydney, on January the 21st in 1987. And Michelle, unlike you, I did not do the research on what hits were out in 87 on the top 10 Australia charts.
I absolutely loved doing that. I should do that more often. I totally didn't do it today either.
Do it now. Do it now. In January 1987, what was Top of the Pops in Australia at the time? I'm going to guess it was probably something to do with In Excess.
1987.
Yes, 87. It could have been something like, what could it be? Ice House? Goanna?
Well, I've got here a list of the top 25 singles for 1987.
Okay. Just give three.
They suck. Are
they dud?
I'm just going to do five. Number five, Respectable. Mel and Kim.
Take. Yeah.
Then Aussies will know this one. Slice of Heaven by Dave Dobbin.
Don't know that one.
Slice of Heaven. You know it. You know it if you hear it.
No, I don't.
Yeah, you do. I'm going to put a link. Number three, Old Time Rock and Roll, Bob Seger.
Give me that old time rock and roll.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay. I thought that was from the 50s.
I know, but I guess maybe he did a reboot.
Cover.
Number two, La 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 Bamba, Los Lobos.
Oh, God. That was painful when that was out.
Yeah, it was. Number one, she's from Neighbours. She's blonde. Oh, Kylie. Everybody's doing a brand new dance now. So there you have it.
I actually thought you were pretty much her just then. You looked like her. You sounded like her. I almost thought I was looking at Kylie for about 2 seconds there.
Not Danny.
Not Danny. You are dark like Danny, but no.
I am dark like Danny. Wow. Well, there you go. Do you know what? I might have to just do a little Google on my year as well. So I'll do that.
Okay, that's a great idea. Meanwhile, I'll carry on. So he went missing, this poor man.
He was listening to the Locomotion and then he just...
He wasn't. But something missing. Went terribly, terribly wrong and this is a tragedy.
Sorry.
He went missing in 1987. He was a father of two children. He had a wife, Pamela. And that day he called her to let her know that he was on his way home for lunch after work. Sorry, during his work day. But he never showed up. And his burnt out car was discovered the next day by the side of the road.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. And after 2 weeks of him being missing, money appeared to have been taken from his bank account to buy camping gear in Newcastle.
What?
Then he was never heard from again.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's weird.
20 years later, there was a public inquest to declare him deceased. And 2 weeks just before the scheduled date, a police officer who had been working on the case discovered a Medicare document with his name, Nagi's name, Gabriel Nagi, and used the information to try to locate him. And it turns out that day back in 1987, he had been driving home from work. His car had crashed. And he subsequently suffered a bout of amnesia.
What?
So no. He'd had a car accident, lost his entire memory.
Lost his mind.
Literally. His wife, Pam, and his daughter, Jennifer, who at the time was 9, and his son, Stephen, who was 11, they were all devastated when they found this burned out wreckage of his car and no sign of him. And a poor old clueless Gabriel had spent the next few years sleeping rough and drinking. And working lots of different jobs, from commercial fishing to farm work to building sites. He was just a vagrant guy wandering from job to job, drinking away, sleeping rough. And then one day, as luck would have it.
So the memory never came back?
Not at this point, no. Fuck. And then one day this pastor from a River of Life church, I don't know what that is. It must be Happy Clappy, I'm assuming. Not trying to put them down or anything. It's just I've never heard of it. It does sound a bit happy, let's face it.
River of Life, yes.
He gave Gabriel an opportunity. He offered him a live-in job as a caretaker. So Gabriel took this up and he just lived his life completely and utterly ignorant of the life and the family that he'd left behind. And his family, on the other hand, had given up on ever seeing Gabriel again.
So did they think that he had died, met with foul play?
They had no idea.
He was just on the missing persons register, I imagine.
Yeah, fuck. I assume so, because there was a police-led inquest that was ongoing.
Right, okay.
He says that he did have a memory, and the only thing he could recall from his previous life was that he was bleeding profusely from a wound on the back of his head, and he now has a scar there.
Well, that's from the car accident, presumably. Yeah.
And he said, I'd been living under a pseudonym for a long time, but I'd been having flashes of my proper name. Things were slowly returning. And this policewoman who pieced it all together with the Medicare document, her name was Senior Constable Georgia Robinson. And she was responsible, like I said, for identifying Gabriel. She had scanned these Medicare records and discovered somebody living under the same name.
Hang on.
Even though he said he was living under a pseudonym.
So
maybe it's because it had come back.
All right. So I wonder what he called himself after he lost his memory, because
I don't know.
This is very interesting and very confusing. Imagine how he must feel about all of this.
Well, you're confused. Poor old Gabriel. So when she tracked him down, she began to ask him a series of questions and gave him letters that she had on her from his wife, children and parents. And the letters actually helped Gabriel to unravel his memory loss, and the moments of his earlier life started to drip feed back into his mind.
I mean, because obviously he's had severe head trauma.
Clearly.
And God knows, probably undiagnosed.
Well, he wouldn't have gone to the doctor. No, he's just been wandering around for all these years. 20 years.
Blood pouring out of his head. People think he's a bum.
Well, that's the thing. People can slip through the cracks so easily. But this is what he said about his memory. He said it was like a cartoon where flash bulbs go off on top of people's heads. And that was his memories coming back. It was kind of visceral.
I wonder what he did before he lost his memory. Was he a lawyer or a doctor? Or
I'm sure that information is out there somewhere, but I did not locate it. I didn't look it up. He was just a guy doing a job. Father of two. But his family then were informed that he was still alive. And so Gabriel composed and sent the longest letter of his life to them. And he said that 3 days later, after sending the letter, he received a text message from his daughter Jennifer, which said, "Hi, Dad." And Jennifer at this point was 34, and she told her dad that she still loved him and wanted to meet up with him. This made Gabriel so emotional, he broke down, and Jennifer said, "He met me at the airport with a big bunch of flowers, and it was like it was all in slow motion, and we ran through the airport into each other's arms."
Wow.
And then Oliver also had... Oliver? Who's Oliver? His name's Gabriel. Why is that? Why have I changed his name? I've changed it.
Or maybe that's what he called himself.
Maybe. Or maybe I just thought it's one of those three-syllable names. So Oliver then had an emotional phone conversation with his former wife, and apparently they spoke to each other until the battery on his mobile phone died.
Okay. Gabriel, so I'm assuming the wife moved on, married again, found someone else.
Michelle, you're asking all the questions I don't have the answers to.
Sorry.
I don't think this article really... I did look elsewhere, but I couldn't find all the details. People haven't gone deep into it yet.
Yeah.
It had just popped up, and dear Tamira just sent it my way. Thank you, Tamira.
Wow.
Maybe we can ask her to do the research on this. But it is thought that Gabriel suffered from something called dissociative fugue, which I found very interesting because I am currently reading about disassociation. And did you know when people disassociate when they've been traumatized? It's a protective mechanism that your brain will do if you are suffering a trauma of some kind.
Okay.
It will protect you. So it's like the blinkers come down. So you're kind of protecting yourself from feeling the awfulness of whatever's happening. But it's also something that we do all the time. When we listen to music, when we drive our car, we disassociate. Mm-hmm. When we're watching movies or TV, you know, we're not fully immersed. We've turned off some of our brain and we're kind of floating in the ether. It's probably what we do when we're watching Maths Australia.
I definitely know that that's what happens when I drive. And it is a little terrifying, actually, because you're driving and you know that you need to be on high alert and whatever. And then all of a sudden, 50 Ks have sped by. You have no clue because you've been...
What were you doing?
Yeah.
It happens to me when I'm doing aqua aerobics sometimes as well. My mind just goes elsewhere. So dissociative fugue is what they think he was suffering from. It's associated with memory loss, loss of conscious awareness, loss of identity and or perception. And when one or more of these functions is disrupted, symptoms can result in the sufferer wandering away from their families. And other symptoms may present as sudden and unplanned travel away from home, an inability to recall past events or important information from the person's life, mm-hmm. confusion or loss of memory about their identity, possibly assuming a new identity to make up for the loss, which is all of the things that poor old Gabriel Nagy did, and also extreme distress and problems with daily functioning. Hence, he was drinking and sleeping rough.
I mean, I have a lot of questions about this case because...
I bet you do.
Yeah, how someone falls through the cracks. I mean, I guess...
It's sad, isn't it?
Well, he didn't stay with his car. The police found a burnt-out wreck. So,
yeah.
But where was the investigation?
No one saw him. Yeah, exactly.
Why didn't police find this guy? I mean, they did eventually, but...
Eventually, they didn't give up on him. They did find him in the end. But daughter Jennifer urges anybody away from their family or who had left home to please let somebody know, because she says she knows firsthand how the not knowing can really affect you. That pain must have been terrible.
They'll fuck you up.
So I'm still calling him Oliver in this story for some reason. I don't know why. I hope his name is Gabriel. Gabriel Nagy has not moved back in with his family, who now live on the Sunshine Coast of Queensland. After they lost him, they moved up north. Mm-hmm. However, he is in regular contact with them. Now, Michelle, this is not the first time a story like this has been told. I looked around the internet and I found that Joan Bolzan's husband went missing in Arizona. He slipped and fell at his office. Why do I think he slipped on a banana skin?
Because.
That's the first thing that came into my head.
We were talking about Connie's earlier.
He didn't slip on a Connie.
Slip it off. Slip on it.
Jesus.
For me, I just feel like just the Connie.
Slip it on, slip it off, and then slip over a banana skin.
Yes, I don't know.
Bloody
it's
hell.
It's all connected. Sorry.
Okay, well, that's not what happened. And the poor old Joan's husband slipped over at work, hit his head and developed retrograde amnesia. Sorry, I can't even say the word. Amnesia, which is a form of memory loss that causes an inability to remember events from the past. And it's caused by injury, illness, stress, infection, or other medical conditions that can affect the brain. And this kind of amnesia can be temporary or it can be permanent. And Jean's hubby's mind was erased entirely from birth until the accident. That's fucked. I got this from the Daily Beast. Jean described to the Daily Beast how she had to get him to fall in love with her all over again.
Oh, I mean, good on her for sticking in there, because if the relationship hadn't been going well, it's a really great opportunity to go, see you later. I'm out of here.
Exactly. Not my problem.
Bye-bye.
Sorry about that banana skin.
See you later.
Goodbye. But Jean, who has to be lauded for her behavior, and she did not do that. Instead, she said, I believe, now reflecting on why he fell in love with me, that the fact I kept loving and supporting him as I always had done helped, along with his pure instinct. His heart began to remember what his brain had lost.
Sweet.
This reminds me of a book that I read by Australian author Leanne Moriarty, who wrote the story of Big Little Lies, which starred Nicole Kidman and Alexander Skarsgård and all those people. I read one of her books called What Alice Forgot, and it's about the Sydney-based housewife who fell off her treadmill and erased all her memories, even of her children being born and from her divorce to her husband. And it went back to a time when she was pregnant with her first child and happily married.
Right.
And she was still talking to her sister and her relationships were all lovely. And she kind of woke up 20 years later in this completely different world. It was really kind of shocking to think that, you know, so much has changed in 20 years and then suddenly the lights go out and you're back there, but everything else has moved on.
Was it a good book?
I did enjoy it, yes. I do like the books that she writes.
It's a good premise. I could seek that out.
Thankfully, though, most cases of retrograde amnesia last for weeks or months rather than years. And I think that's what the heroine in What Alice Forgot had suffered from.
Right.
Sometimes, Michelle, amnesia is not always to blame for people just disappearing from their lives. Mm. And if you might remember, one time I said something and you said,
Pin that.
I told you about an 11-year-old boy called Alex Batty who was taken on holiday to Spain by his mum, and she wasn't his guardian at the time, and he disappeared. And then he returned some years later.
I mean, you know, I have zero memory, but it is sort of ringing a little
bell. It's so much fun talking to you. I just love it. I love it. It's so much fun. You always know what I'm talking about.
It's like it's new again. So I'm excited.
Good. Well, I'm going to tell you about Alex Batty, who you were interested in once, believe it or not, to hear about. He was taken on a holiday to Spain by his mum. At the time, he was in the care of his grandmother, who was his legal guardian. It was arranged that she goes on holiday, takes the kid, brings him back. But his mum, Melanie Batty, did not have legal guardianship. And her father, David Batty, so the kid's grandfather, they both did this. They lived an alternative lifestyle and took him on a 2-week holiday in 2017 and never returned. Basically abducted him, yeah. And poor old Alex's gran was beside herself, and she said that when he disappeared, she did receive a video message from her daughter Melanie and her ex David Batty explaining what they'd done, and there was Alex on there saying that it was a million times better being with his mum and granddad. Gran said they didn't want the 11-year-old to go to any schools or anything. They didn't believe in mainstream education, and the three fugitives were said to be living in a house in Spain as part of a spiritual community. Apparently, Melanie Batty and her ex-husband had previously lived in a commune in Morocco with Alex back in 2014, and I assume this is how she lost custody. After a couple of years, though, during this abduction, Alex's life was like a vacation. He was having a great time, just spending his days doing whatever he wanted, reading, drawing, going to the beach, until he was about 14. And he started to work in order to help with food and rent. And he said he did a lot of construction work, demolition work, decorating, all that kind of thing. And then in the autumn of 2021, Alex was taken in by a family in the French Pyrenees. And he lived on and off in their remote mountain farmhouse in exchange for doing jobs around the house. At that time, he was living under an alias of Zach. And he said he loved to cook and help in the garden. The couple who ran the farmhouse were Frederick Hamby and Ingrid Bove. They also had children there, and they said that he was great to have around. They took him on trips to the beach, treated him as a member of their own family. He had his own room. And sometimes his granddad, David Batty, would join them and work at their gîte as well in exchange for food and accommodation. So they knew them quite well. It is reported that Alex would occasionally join his mother in all these different places that she was living, very vagrant lifestyle between all different places in Europe and France, Spain, Morocco. But he would then go and stay with the French couple at the gîte. And the reason why the mother wasn't there was because it wasn't really the sort of spiritual community that she was searching for.
So just to recap this, she takes the kid because she really desperately wants to bring up the kid. And then basically at 14 years old, after not schooling him, so the dude can probably not even do 1 + 1. She's just like, off you go at age 14.
Yeah.
You're fucking joking. I'm not liking this.
At around 16 years of age, though, Alex had mentioned to the French couple who he was working and living with that he wanted to return to a normal life. And he said he needed to go back to the UK to get his identity documents. And they offered to drive him to the British consulate. But he said, no, thank you. I'll find my own way there. So he eventually managed to escape from the nomadic life that he was living with his mum and granddad in Spain, Morocco, France, all those different places. Because I think also she was heading to Finland next and he'd had enough of this.
Yeah.
So he planned to leave, didn't tell anyone. And about 20 minutes before he snuck away, he wrote his mum a note saying that he loved her and not to worry about him. And then he took off about midnight. So he was walking in the middle of nowhere in darkness for ages. He was walking day and night. He said the first night it was raining a lot. It was pitch black. He didn't know where he was going. He'd sleep on the street. And then one day he was found wandering in Toulouse in France at about 3 a.m. in the morning in the rain, clutching his skateboard. A van passed him and then turned back. And the driver was a chiropractor called Fabien Axedini, who kindly offered Alex a lift. Alex then got in with Fabienne and he told him he'd been hiking in nearby mountains for more than 4 days in an attempt to get home to England.
Mm.
He also told Fabienne that his mother was a little crazy, but that she never imprisoned him. and he described her as anti-government, anti-vax, and said that he had become fed up of her nomadic lifestyle and not having any friends of his own age or a social life.
I wonder if she also was a QAnon, believes in Pizzagate, magical thinking. It's maybe, I'm just speculating here.
Probably very much like that. Who knows? But Alex had had enough. He said he was tired, but in good health. And he was checked over by French officials who said that he seemed intelligent, even though he hadn't attended school for 6 years. Mm. Now, Melanie Batty is now wanted in connection with his disappearance. She might be in Finland, while grandfather David Batty sadly passed away since. Okay. Alex is now 17 years old and was returned to the UK on the 16th of December 2023 to his gran in Manchester. And in an interview, he said of his mum, Melanie, he said, "She's a great person and I love her, but she's just not a great mum." He said that she feared if he were to return to England, he would become a slave to the system. So after a massive argument, he decided she was too set in her ways and he wanted more from his life and to be with people of his own age. And he said, "I'm sorry for leaving, but it was necessary for my future."
That's quite heartbreaking because he really had no choice. He was just taken and maybe a little brainwashed by the granddad and the mom. Brought up to believe that this was the only way, you know, nomadic life.
And it would have been fun for an 11-year-old as yeah. well, not having to go to school, doing his own thing, holidays all the time.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of when you were talking about Aleister Crowley's kid who was just smoking cigars and doing whatever, didn't go to school. Yeah. But look, I do think this kid obviously wanted something else for his life, which is why he ran away. Oh my gosh. Well, thanks for those amazing stories.
You're welcome.
I'll link those up on the Patreon. And if you're not a Patreon member, peeps, it's not too late. It's never too late.
Never too late.
To sign up.
Trojan True. Trojan True.
Well, I've got a little something, something, something for you today.
What do you got?
Well, like I said, I also have a story that is an Australian story, and it is from 1998. And
okay,
in the theme of what we were doing before, I just looked up
what was in the charts.
Well, these were the top singles for 1998. So, number five, "Never Ever," All Saints.
Never ever have I ever been sad.
Yeah,
that one.
Number four, "I Don't Want to Miss a Thing," Aerosmith.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. "Iris" by Goo Goo Dolls.
I don't know it.
I don't know it either. "It's Like That," Run DMC versus Jason.
And that's the way it is.
"It's Like That." That's it. I didn't know it until you just said that. And and then number one, Ricky Martin, "La Copa de la Vida," The Cup of Life. "Un, dos, tres, Maria." Do you know what? This one? I don't know it.
No.
I don't know.
"Upside, inside out, living la vida loca."
Well, see, I thought that was just "Living la vida loca." I thought that was a different song.
Maybe it's that.
I don't know. Maybe it's that. I mean, that was huge. So that's your cultural snapshot for 1998.
Lovely. I'm there, Michelle. I am there.
Well, cast your mind to Rockhampton in Queensland. That's where we're going with this story. Imagine you drop your 14-year-old daughter off at school, kiss her goodbye. She says, "Love you, Mum." And that's the last time you see her.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Fucking heartbreaking. This is exactly what happened to Jenny Ryan, mum of Natasha Ryan, who went missing on August 31st, 1998, as I said, in Rockhampton, Queensland. When Natasha didn't come home from school that day, her mum, Jenny, rang the school concerned, you know, because she knew that she dropped her off that morning. And they checked and Natasha's name had not been marked off the attendance roll.
So she didn't arrive at school?
No. Jenny, the mum, she was concerned, but Natasha had been going through a bit of a spate of running away from home. She'd done this before. So Jenny just thought, oh, she's probably doing the whole "I'm running away from home" thing. And she just waited, hoping that she would return. But when she didn't come home that night, Jenny decided the next day it was time to report Natasha missing. And she contacted the police, and the media obviously got hold of the story, and witnesses did come forward to say that they had seen a girl matching Natasha's description outside the cinema in Rockhampton on the night she disappeared. This girl was smoking a ciggy and talking to an older man. Then these witnesses said they heard the screech of car tires, and then she was gone. Based on this info, a massive search began, you know, trying to find Natasha. It seemed like Natasha, who, I don't know why, but she had a nickname of Grasshopper.
Is she into karate or something?
I don't know. Why would you say that? Grasshopper.
Isn't that what they call the young kid in Karate Kid?
I don't know. Grasshopper. I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it's like a young karate kid.
She could have been lean.
A young learning.
She could have been good at high jump. I don't know. I really don't know.
Possibly.
I think the police were kind of leaning towards the idea that Natasha had been snatched.
Yeah.
But despite exhaustive searches for her, it did seem like Natasha had just vanished without a trace.
Oh, God.
In fact, the search for Natasha and, you know, the police investigation into what happened to her, Geordie, it dragged on for years. And the police department estimate that they put probably around $500,000 behind trying to find her and investigate what happened to her, which in the late 90s was a shit ton of money. You know, a little bit like your guy. You know, they haven't given up on finding her. They've kept the investigation alive. So, like I said before, at first, Natasha's parents had hoped she'd just run away again and that she would be found quickly. You know, she was going through this rebellious phase. You know, she had run away from home quite a few times in the year before she disappeared. She was also doing naughty stuff like wagging school and smoking. And she also had a 21-year-old boyfriend.
Oh, that's too old for a 14-year-old.
It's disgusting, which obviously the family was not happy about. When she went missing, the first port of call for the police was the boyfriend. And they went to interview this much older boyfriend, and his name's Scott Black. Now, the police interrogated him, but he was really insistent that he had absolutely no idea where Natasha was. And he even helped the family and police search for Natasha. According to the family and also the older boyfriend, Scott Black, Natasha was not on drugs. She wasn't pregnant. Aside from the fact that there had been family quarrels about the fact she was seeing this older guy, she didn't really have any other real reason to run away. And honestly, while I was doing the research for this, Geordie, at this point, I did just think, why the fuck was this guy not arrested for being a total fucking pedophile?
Exactly. Isn't that illegal? I don't know. It's disgusting.
I mean, look, it's the late 90s in Queensland. I don't know what the laws were. Maybe it wasn't considered completely illegal at that time. I don't know.
Right. I don't know. State by state. I don't know. But I'm pretty sure that's statutory rape.
Fucking red flags here. I think it's statutory rape too.
But she's not around to testify that they had sex.
No. So I guess, it could have been innocent and platonic, and he certainly could have argued that, I guess. But either way, look, suspicion was moved away from Scott Black, and the police began to focus more on the idea that Natasha had been a victim of foul play, because they did exhaust all their leads and they came up with nothing. As the months rolled on, the Rockhampton police began to join the dots between Natasha's disappearance and a spate of other missing persons cases. 8 months after Natasha went missing, Rockhampton was rocked once again by, I shouldn't joke about this because this is awful, and I probably should do a trigger warning here.
Okay.
They were absolutely shell-shocked by the disappearance of a 9-year-old girl called Kira Steinhardt, who went missing while she was walking home from school. Now, once the parents raised the alarm that Kira was missing, hundreds of volunteers from Rockhampton all banded together to scour the local parks, the waterways, the bushland, trying to find any trace of her. And eventually, the search did uncover some grim details led them to suspect that a guy called Leonard Fraser was involved in Kira's disappearance. And trigger warning again here, police discovered that in broad daylight, Kira had been dragged into Leonard's car. He'd sexually assaulted her and then cut her throat and dumped her body in bushland on the outskirts of Rockhampton.
Fucking hell.
When they searched Leonard's car, forensic tests did confirm that blood found in the boot of Leonard's car was Kira's blood. But they also found blood from a second person in the boot as well. After hauling Leonard into the station and grilling him for days about Kira's murder and who else's blood was in the boot, Leonard finally cracked and admitted, yes, he had killed Kira. He did actually eventually lead police to where he dumped Kira's remains. Thank God for her family, actually.
Yeah.
Thing is, Kira wasn't the only one who had gone missing in recent months. Three other Rockhampton women were also missing. Beverly Lego, 36, Sylvia Benedetti, who was 19, and Julie Turner, 39.
Oh my God.
So the police speculated that not only could Natasha be part of this spate of missing people, but that Leonard Fraser, who is now nicknamed the Rockhampton Rapist, could actually be behind the disappearance of these women, and that they basically had a serial killer on their hands, especially as police were now getting loads of leads related to him. Like, somebody found a blood splatter in an abandoned building in Rockhampton, and they thought that Leonard could have been connected to that. There were other witnesses who came forward to report that Leonard had been behaving erratically and done some disturbing shit and was behaving weirdly. But when police tried to go hard on Leonard about the missing women, Leonard clammed up, wouldn't say a word about any of them. So while he was ultimately convicted of Kira's murder, he did not spill any details about what might have happened to the other missing women, including Natasha. I think he kind of remained stum because I think he knew it was a bit of an ace up his sleeve. He could maybe try and use that as a bargaining chip. Thing is, though, while Leonard was in prison, he got matey with another prisoner and started to kind of open up and tell this guy about all the horrible stuff he'd done.
Gross.
And this guy was a total fucking snitch and went to the police with Leonard's info and used what he knew about Leonard as a bargaining chip for himself.
To reduce his own sentence.
Yeah, to get a lighter sentence. It kind of backfired a little bit for Leonard. So armed with this new information, the police did go to Leonard and basically told him, look, if you admit to the murders and give details to us about where the bodies are, you know, in return, we'll put you in protective custody. Because as you can imagine, at this point, Leonard was just in normal prison and he was getting fucked up by the other prisoners for being a child rapist and a killer. You know, there's, I think, some kind of hierarchy in prisons where that's the lowest of the low. So he did actually strike a deal with prosecutors that, you know, he would give information to get protective custody. Leonard then confessed to the murders of Sylvia Benedetti, Beverly Lego, and the manslaughter of Julie Turner. And he confessed to abducting and killing Natasha Ryan.
Oh, no.
And I read that for some of his victims, he cut off their ponytails, Geordie, and kept them as trophies. But it wasn't clear whether or not he had Natasha's ponytail. Obviously, this confession was heartbreaking news for Natasha's family, who, you know, having had no news on Natasha's disappearance in almost a year, because the police had just gone dry on leads. You know, this confession from Leonard Fraser came at a time when they'd all but given up on ever finding Natasha or her body. It did mean that finally friends and family accepted that on August 31, 1998, Natasha had been murdered by the Rockhampton Rapist.
Yeah.
So 2.5 years after Natasha had disappeared, in May 2001, after the police, you know, reached a dead end with Leonard in trying to get info out of him as to where Natasha's body was, the family and friends organised a memorial for Natasha where, you know, they all got together. They released balloons into the sky in her memory. You know, they were all just traumatized and crying for this girl who never got to grow up, whose body was nowhere to be found. It was awful. and the memorial was held on what would have been her 17th birthday.
Okay.
And over the next 2 years, Natasha's family really struggled with the grief and trauma of losing Natasha and having no closure because there was no body. You know, Leonard still hadn't told police what he'd done with her remains after he'd murdered her. And they couldn't understand what was going on because, you know, he had willingly taken the police to Kira's remains. Why couldn't he do it with these other women? And more than that, Leonard Fraser still had not been sentenced for his crimes. The court case was still ongoing, you know, so the family still had no closure about any of this until the 11th of April, 2003, when things got weird, Jordy. Leonard Fraser was in court and it was dragging on because he was being tried for 6 murders, Jeez. Including the murder of Natasha.
Yeah.
However, the court was fucking shell-shocked when a police prosecutor called Paul Rutledge stood up and announced to the court that Leonard Fraser was not guilty of the murder of Natasha Ryan because Natasha wasn't dead. Natasha was, in fact, alive and well and living with that same older boyfriend she had when she was 14 years old. She was living with Scott Black.
No way.
Yes.
It's like a Bobby Ewing moment.
Oh my God, it's a little bit Dallas, isn't it? Apparently, the police had found Natasha the night before hiding in a cupboard.
What?
At Scott Black's house. It turns out an anonymous note had been sent to the Rockhampton police that read, Natasha Ryan is alive and well. And it included a telephone number and the address of a house. Police actually followed up on the note and raided the house, which Scott Black was renting. And after they searched the house, there they found Natasha, who was 18 at this point.
And living in a cupboard.
Cowering in a cupboard. Yep, living in a cupboard.
She was living in the cupboard.
Well, she said that she would often hide in that cupboard when someone came to the house.
She was there by her own choice, right?
She was there by her own choice. Okay. Yes, she was. Obviously, it's fucking shocking.
Yes. She must have known the trouble that people were going to look for her. The sadness of her family.
You would fucking hope so. Otherwise, she's a monster. But, you know, I did read actually that there was a massage therapist who somehow had got wind of the fact that Natasha was still alive. He'd been reading the papers that this guy, the serial killer, was going to court for the murder of Natasha. And he was like, okay, this Rockhampton rapist, yeah, he's a fucking asshole and deserves to rot in jail forever. However, he didn't kill Natasha because I think she's hiding in a cupboard.
Ugh.
Yeah, so he was the one that sent the note.
Right.
And that's what kicked off the whole thing.
Yes.
When police called Natasha's mother, Jenny just couldn't assimilate what she was hearing.
I bet.
Yeah. Well, she thought the police were calling her to tell her they'd found Natasha's body. Not that they'd found Natasha alive.
That would be such a spin out.
I just don't think that you'd be able to cope because it turns out that for nearly 5 years, Natasha had been living in secret, hiding in that house, never leaving the house, living inside a dark house with the curtains closed all day, just a few blocks. From her mum's house.
Is it worth it? Good God.
Obviously, her family were shocked when they were told that she was alive.
I'm sure.
At first, I think they were relieved that their daughter hadn't been, you know, cut into pieces by a serial killer.
Well, yeah, that would be the first thought.
But then they felt angry and betrayed. Because
and that would be the second feeling,
of course, because, you know, they had spent 5 years thinking that a serial killer had raped and murdered their daughter. When all the time she was living with that older boyfriend. Less than 5 km away from the family home.
So what was the upshot? What did they do to him?
Well, the upshot is that, yes, the police did prosecute him for perjury because he had obviously lied to police saying that that he didn't have any clue where she was. He definitely knew what he was doing because the pair really did go to great lengths to hide what was going on. You know, apparently Natasha had made her own pads out of old bath towels so Scott wouldn't look weird going to buy tampons for her.
God's sake.
Yeah. And when people obviously dropped by to visit, Natasha
would go back to her cupboard.
She never left the house unless it was in the dead of night.
Wow. What a life.
Yeah. Well, I read that she'd gone to the beach a few times over the 5 years that she was in hiding, but it was always at night when no one would see them.
Yeah, but that's when the sharks come out, Michelle.
Well, they should have fucking taken her, because what she did is not very nice.
No.
And I did read that she was perfectly fine and healthy when she was found.
Yeah.
But that she was deathly pale because she hadn't seen the sun for years. She didn't even go in the backyard.
All for this one dickhead.
All for this one dickhead. But she did say in 2007 for New Idea in Australia, which is a Maggie, as my mum would call them.
Maggie.
It's a Maggie magazine. Mum loves her Maggies. Trash Maggies. Natasha apparently said, "It was my decision to run away. Scott was doing something really lovely and protecting me.
By putting me in the cupboard."
And she said, "I felt like I should have been or deserved to be punished."
What, by sitting in the cupboard?
I don't really know. I mean, why she felt she should be punished more than she fucking lied to everyone so she could be with this older guy and let her parents believe that she was dead and let this guy almost have extra years put on his sentence for murdering her.
It's awful.
Yeah, it's shit. But on the subject of media scrutiny and press, the whole thing did turn into a media circus when, a day after she was reported being found alive, a celebrity agent called Max Markson flew from Sydney to Rockhampton to represent Natasha, aka milk the shit out of this whole bizarre story. And that's when the proverbial shit hit the fan. Newspapers, magazines, media outlets all over the world suddenly went into a bidding frenzy for the exclusive rights to Natasha's story, with 60 Minutes and two other magazines all paying more than $250,000 each for interviews. Then journalists were swamping Rockhampton to try and get pics of Natasha. And all the while, she and her celebrity agent were cashing in the checks that were rolling in from all over the world, including from News of the World, who we know had deep pockets for stories like this. News of the World, actually, if you go online, you'll see there's a picture of Natasha in the cupboard where she, you know, was regularly hiding in. She posed for that pic for News of the World. God. She was all up into getting as much cash as she could milk from this. And it was a cash cow for years for her, because she then pocketed huge cash for exclusive interviews when she got pregnant.
With
the same boyfriend.
Oh, God.
Mm-hmm. And then she and Scott Black actually married in 2008. And again, all the Maggies paid big money for wedding pics, exclusive interviews. There were quotes from her like, "We were sitting at home and suddenly he pulled out the ring." You know, the emotions were overwhelming. So she's playing the media game. Now, while she's raking in the dollars, people were pissed off.
I bet.
Yeah, because here she is financially benefiting from her fraud, which I think it's fraud. Police had spent, you know, $500,000 on investigating her disappearance and taking time and money away from real cases. So there was a public outcry and calls for her to hand over, you know, all the money she was making from these media deals to pay for the wasted police search.
Okay.
But she didn't. There were also calls for both of them to be jailed for misleading the public.
Yeah.
And Scott actually did get sentenced to 3 years in jail, but it was suspended after 12 months for perjury, like I said before. And the thing is, he did plead guilty to that because, you know, there was no denying he totally knew where Natasha was. And Natasha did actually get found guilty of causing a false police investigation and was fined $1,000.
Oh, is that all?
That's it.
Okay.
$1,000.
Wow.
I mean, that's quite shit. But, you know, what I think is the most horrible thing here is how she put her family through 5 years of trauma.
It's the family. Yes. Mm-hmm. That's who I feel for as well.
Yeah. And look, I did find a quote from her where she said, and this is a quote, "I'm never going to publicly say why I left. I know why I left. I'm not sure my mum and my sister completely know all the reasons, and I'm not sure it would make any difference saying why I left. I feel whatever I say wouldn't be good enough for the pain I've caused my family." So she does know she's caused pain.
She does know, yeah.
But, and you know, maybe a little bit of remorse for what she did.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Not enough. I mean, to be fair, she was 14 and under the influence of an older guy who
we don't know. She's not to know. She was a child.
She was a child.
Yeah.
Look, after the pair got married and raked in the cash, it seems like they did disappear from the media spotlight. And apparently Natasha Ryan now goes by the name Tash Black. She and her hubby, Scott, they don't have social media accounts that I could find. Apparently she studied nursing at Central Queensland University and is working now as a nurse. And apparently they don't live in Rockhampton anymore. But the family have forgiven her. And by all accounts, I did read that they all get on well. So good. All's well that ends well.
So happy days.
Happy days for the girl in the fucking cupboard.
Right. Wow, Michelle. That's insane.
It is insane. I mean, it's awful. Awful to put yourself in the mum's shoes. You drop your kid off at school. You're told she's been murdered by a rapist. And then she's run away to be with her older boyfriend.
That's some serious trauma there.
Yeah.
For the parents, for the family.
Absolutely.
That was a long time to be feeling that way and to be processing that information and then to have it flipped on its head. I mean, I just can't even imagine what that must do to a person.
No, I can't either. And to then milk the shit out of your story and just get as much money. I mean, you know, if there hasn't been some Netflix documentary about it, there will be in the future because it's too crazy, this story.
Yeah. I mean, it reminds me of a crazy Netflix story. As you were telling the end bit there, it was reminding me of something that I watched. I can't remember what it was called. An American something.
Okay.
It was recommended by Rains Park Mark, and I watched it. It's a two-parter. It is so damn good. You think you know what the story is going to be, and you don't.
Okay.
A bit like yours.
Remember that, and I'll link it up on the Patreon.
I'll remember and I'll get back to you. Yeah.
But that's all I got for you, Geordie.
Well, well done, Michelle. I loved that. Thank you so much for telling me that intriguing story. Mm. And thanks for just showing up and showing out, as always.
Showing up and showing out.
Always showing up and showing out. Yeah.
I'm showing all sorts. Show and tell here. Show and tell.
Show and tell.
Yes.
With you, Michelle.
Yes. And for anyone who is on the Patreon, I hope you enjoyed the picture. We did talk about this in a previous episode of Geordie with a cigarette. Speaking of show and tell, it is up on the Patreon. So
okay,
she's looking great.
But that doesn't mean that it's a good idea to smoke, people. Let me just say, just because I look great with a cigarette does not mean it's great to smoke. Okay, it's not good for everyone.
No.
I don't smoke anymore.
Smoking kills.
Smoking, yes, kills. Just don't do it.
Don't do it, people. Don't do it, people. But really, Geordie, look, I feel like we have come to the end here of our Australian deep dive.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's that time of the show where we say, wherever you are,
whatever you do, just keep eavesdropping.
Eavesdropping.
Dropping.
Eavesdropping.
Dropping.
Eavesdropping.
Dropping.
Dropping.